Hello, welcome to Tales Over Tales. I'm Jordan.
I'm Alicia.
I'm Abigail.
Oh my goodness, we're all together. Why does it feel like it's been a minute? It's been a hot minute.
Mm-hmm, it has been.
Oh my gosh, it's been fast. I kind of wish that we were getting together to discuss not a better book, but I mean, a less uncomfortable, cringy book, but at the same time, it's all good. It's just wonderful to see your lovely faces.
Agreed.
How are you doing, Abigail? You look really pretty.
Thanks. That's funny that you say that, because I'm just in the same like lounge where I've been in all day. I literally rolled out of bed, threw this on, and I was like, that's it.
How have you been doing, though? How are things going?
I think they're going really well, actually. Let's see. Highs and lows. Let me think. Over the last month, highs have been that, my sister came to visit yesterday, actually. She came Friday night, and she stayed until yesterday. And it was nice to see her, because I hadn't seen her in, like, a month. And so for those who don't know, my sister, she's in the Air Force. And so she's, you know, on missions a lot or going to drill over the weekend. So we tend to miss each other. So it was nice to see her, spend some time. And just honestly, we just rested the whole day. It wasn't about like, oh, let's do this, let's do this. It's like, let's just rest and just be, which was nice.
So I love that.
Did you tell Alicia she recently finished nursing school?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. Very nice. How exciting.
And I'm like, oh my gosh.
I miss her. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, she's, my sweet sister. And then let's see, any lows that I can think of. This is always a lot harder because one, I don't do much. I like go to work, I come home, I am something like somewhat of like what I call myself a cozy gamer. So I'll play Sims or some type of cozy game and I'll relax, decompress from the day. And then we'll have dinner. My boyfriend and I will come together, make dinner, and then we'll go to bed. Like that is my routine and I love it. Nothing's been out of the norm for that. So I would say things have been going decently well.
Good. Okay. I feel like I want to meet more in your community, more people in your community that play Sims. I don't know people that still play Sims.
Actually, Victoria still like plays, and so we talk about it. And then Sister Vicky plays, and so we talk about it. Something we do together. So those are the only people I know directly. But I also follow a lot of like professionals who are cozy gamers. They have their own YouTube channels. This one gamer I love, her name is Cozy K. She's a lawyer, like a legit lawyer. And then she cozy games are her 5 to 9. And she just makes it look so nice. So yeah, I definitely love the cozy gamer community.
That's awesome.
Interesting, because something of what goes on in the book that we're going to talk about today. So that's really interesting. Alicia, did you ever play Sims?
I did actually, and I had re-downloaded it on my old Mac, but then that Mac took a poop. So I need to I could probably get it on my Xbox because I have an Xbox, so I could probably just, you know, hop on there. But
not since high school.
I know. I miss it though. It was so fun. I remember it being so fun to play. So I think I might need to plug this bad boy in and maybe start playing.
It is. It's a nice way to like decompress because it's a lot of people will use it in many ways, but the way I use it is really just to decompress and relax and to just enjoy, you know, a life that's different than mine. Like my, you know, my person in Sims, the single woman, and she has like this like amazing farm and, you know, so, you know, just kind of do the day-to-day stuff. It's really fun, and I just really enjoy just everything about it.
I remember you, like, you know, you can create a whole life, obviously. It's a whole world. So
whole thing, yeah.
It's so I'm like our main character. I do know the difference between reality and fiction.
Wow. Yo. Well, Alicia, do you want to share some highs and lows?
Sure. We can start with low. So we, I came down with a bout of the flu, and so did Vivian, unfortunately, but we are both much better, and thankfully it was just her and I that got sick. Jermaine just totally skipped by it. Grandma, same. She didn't get sick from it, so that's good. So me and Viv got sick, but like I said, we're on the mend. I still have like a weird cough, and it's been like a couple of weeks now, but we're all good. Some highs. My husband's sister is in town for the week, so she gets to be here and hang out with us. So that's exciting. We get to go show her around our little area over here, so that's fun. And then yesterday, Jordan and I got to hang out. We got our nails done and we had our book club. So that was like, I know, right? I'm like, oh, look at my nails. So it was like super fun.
Super cute.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. And then we went to like a wrestling event after we got done with our book club, and it was like outdoors, like outside a bar.
I did not go.
No, Jordan didn't go. I met up with Jermaine and his sister, and it was like a cage match, and it was like chaotic, and it was so fun. But yeah, so those are my highs.
I like it.
Yeah, what about you, Jordan? How are you doing?
I feel like I'm doing better. I'll start with my low. Yeah, so I took a little bit of time off to be with my husband over spring break. Both of us ended up getting sick, so that was not super fun, especially when you are using vacation time and you have, you know, just different things that you had planned and were looking forward to. So that's definitely my low. Good news is that we're on the mend. He goes back from spring break tomorrow, so things feel like we're getting a little bit back to normal here, which is nice. And my high would definitely be yesterday, book club and a mani-pedi date. Like it was... Mm-hmm. It was a perfect Saturday afternoon. So I was super encouraged and really grateful. So it was a fun time for sure. So, and it was really cool to get to meet some amazing women. I think if there are any of you listeners out there considering whether or not you want to be a part of a book club, a local book club, it definitely, like, don't even consider it anymore. Just do it, because it's a way to get into your community. You read things you might not otherwise get to read or be exposed to, and then you get to meet different people. So I'm all for it. But yeah, that would be my highs and lows, I think. So definitely it's turning around weather-wise. We're getting warmer out here.
Not here.
No, the weather out here is so odd, because it was like warm the last couple of days, and now it's like going to be cool for a few days and then back to warm and back to cold. And I'm like, what's happening?
Make up your mind.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh my goodness. Well, all right. We've put it off long enough. Should we talk about book?
Shall we talk about what are you guys drinking before we get into that?
Yes. So I have just your standard traditional martini. I don't know about Abigail. What about you?
I also have a standard traditional martini, but I accidentally added too much gin to it. So I'm going to be a little saucy by the end of this.
And what about you, Alicia?
So I totally went off my rails, and I am drinking a Cosmo. I found this at Total Wine. It's called the Perfect Cosmo by SJP, and it has like lime, cranberries and strawberries in it. And it is very strong, which is needed for this book.
Is it good? It looks good.
It's so tasty. It's so good. I recommend.
There you go. Oh my goodness. Okay. So yes, listener, let's dive in. We read None of This is True by Lisa Jewell. Abigail, you want to take it away for us with the summary?
Yes, of course. So on their 45th birthdays, Alex Summer and Josie Fair first meet. Their lives couldn't be more different from each other. The only common factor between these two women is that they are birthday twins. Alex Summer is a well-known journalist slash podcaster who appears to have it all put together from the outside. From the beautiful, perfect home to the husband with the fancy job and the children in their private school uniforms, there wouldn't seem to be much lacking in Alex's life. Josie Fair, on the other hand, is a high school dropout that got married at 18 to Walter, a man nearly twice her age. After becoming a young mother of two daughters, Josie quickly realizes that her life is far from what she had hoped. Their lives collide when Josie asks Alex to interview her for her next podcast project. Alex agrees despite her own reservations, as Josie insists that she has a story that needs to be told. What transpires between these two women is a twisted tale of chaos, deceit, and murder that will leave everyone involved permanently scarred.
All right, listener, it goes without saying, but I actually feel like we should give a couple of content warnings at the top. If you have been a faithful listener of ours, you know we are spoiler central. I'm just going to throw it out there. These are book club style discussions that we do here at Tales Over Tales podcast. Therefore, we talk to you as if you have read the book. So if you haven't, I totally would recommend reading along with us, or if you don't mind it being spoiled for you, by all means, but just want to put that out there. And I'll add another content warning on this one for a second as well, that we are going to be talking about some layers, obviously, of abuse, whether that's pedophilia, child abuse, domestic violence, any of those kinds of things. So please take care. If that is something that you are sensitive to, we can catch you next month. No problem. Oh my goodness. With all of that being said, what did we think of book?
I was texting you so much towards the end of this book. And I was like, what the heck is happening? Like, this book made me so uncomfy. But the thing that I appreciated about this book compared to like another thriller type, like Verity, I appreciated the context of this a lot more, because there were a lot of things that I, you know, it's just the writing of this was beautiful. I totally called Walter's murder, by the way, which I was very proud of.
I hands down was like, I don't think he's making it out of this book alive. I actually, from the top, and I don't know if either of you thought this too. So listener, Josie and Walter's daughters are Erin and Ruby, or Roxy. I thought that they were dead. I actually legit thought that they were both dead from the,
because of like, she was like, kept saying that there was a smell in the room. And that's I was like, either
going Alfred Hitchcock Psycho in my brain, Norman Bates.
Because what I was thinking when she kept saying like there was a smell coming from Aaron's room, I thought like either like I thought Roxy was just the dead one, and maybe like Roxy was just kind of like tucked in the room with her sister in some like eerie kind of way. And then just come to find out that, you know, Erin just has, you know, a disorder, and, you know, just, it was just neglect central, you know, on Josie's side too. But yeah, the book was, I was shook.
Yeah.
Some of your predictions, some of your thoughts, Abigail.
I agreed. I did not think Walter was making it out, especially there was a few lines that really foreshadowed this. Like when Josie was listening to the podcast and she got really fixated on that one line, like death is a clean break. I was like, he ain't go, ain't making it to the end of this book. I don't know how it's gonna happen, but that's it for him. And then when she approached Alex with her pod, with the idea for the podcast, she said, she was saying, what if like you're doing a podcast and interviewing someone who's actively changing their lives? And I was like, oh, that was my next indication, like Walter, he's a goner. But there was so much uncovered during this book. I thought Erin was alive. I just thought that maybe she was drugged or something. Like I was anticipating like in the baby food, like Josie was like drugging her so she didn't leave her room really, or like, you know, kind of making her lethargic or something. I knew something strange. I felt like something really strange was going on there. And then with Roxy, I did think Roxy was dead. I did not think Roxy was gonna make an appearance. So I was very shocked when she did at the end.
Right? Mm-hmm. Oh my. Yeah, we don't need to spend too long talking about it, but we can talk about the daughters for a second. We can talk about Erin and Roxy. So I did think that the baby food element was an interesting caveat. It was an interesting touch to, mm-hmm. I mean, it does get explained to a degree, but I don't know a ton of autistic people in my life or too many people on the spectrum, but I've never heard of that particular, like, no, I prefer my food pureed. I prefer it like, mm-hmm. So if that's a thing.
Yeah, people on the autism spectrum, like who have been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, that's what ASD is. They have, like, everyone is so unique and individual, and every individual experiences it differently. But basically, like, one thing is that there's a sensitivity to like some certain like textures with food, or maybe like textures like they're feeling. And so it could be that, you know, like Erin developed a discomfort with textures of like different solid foods, and then started to prefer like soups and purees and all that, because it was just, you know, when it comes to like textures, another way to like call it like tactile. So that's another way to like talk, like say about like feeling. Like if you're feeling something or you're having something in your mouth. So yeah, it was like a huge discomfort for her. So when I learned about, like when I saw that was her diagnosis, I was like, oh, okay. You know, so she doesn't like solid foods. It probably doesn't feel right in her mouth. Like maybe like one time she ate something and like it tasted weird or it felt weird, and she just decided she didn't want to have solid foods anymore.
Wasn't that like something too, after everything happened and Erin was in the hospital, she woke up from her coma. Was it Roxy or was it the nurse that was like, oh, soft foods, right? And she was like, yeah, soft foods. I think it was Roxy that made that comment. So yeah, so that was kind of where like we get to that kind of degree where she did prefer the soft foods, because at that point she could have been like, no, mom was just trying to starve me and I actually want a hamburger. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I feel like that was kind of an interesting touch with that too.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, thank you for shedding light on that. We are definitely going to be visiting Mental Health Corner with our resident mental health professional Abigail over here quite a bit on this book. Okay, because can we just talk about how it was weird from the jump? It was weird and it was odd from the very beginning.
It was super weird. Yeah, I know. And like, so the thing for me that made it a little more enjoyable is because I listened to it on Spotify, but I also like read it at the same time, which I enjoyed it doing it that way, because when I was listening to it, there were parts when they were doing like the Netflix documentary, but they weren't including the description of like the scene. So that's what kind of made it a little bit better to read along with it. So it made it a little bit more eerie too, like when you knew they were going to switch to talking about the documentary part. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and we didn't talk about this as much in the description in the summary, but it sort of serves as like a then and now timeline, right? Where you get this, "Hi, I'm your birthday twin," Netflix series that's supposed to be, you know, in the future. And then you're getting some of like the podcast recordings with Josie and Alex. And you're also getting, you know, in the moment stuff that's happening and going on. So I, from time to time, found it a little hard to follow at the beginning. I was able to pick it up rather quickly. You know, you sort of start to piece it together and get the gist. I thought it was written really well overall.
I agree. I thought it was well written. I, as someone who enjoys like listening to like true crime like podcasts or even watching true crime documentaries, it was a really interesting way, because when I'm watching these documentaries and I'm like kind of like saying like, how do these people weasel themselves into the like this person's life? And like, why did this person give them so much access? Like, you know, all these questions come up. And I like the way the book was written, the format of it, is because you have the future, like the podcast of, okay, this is what happened, and this is like the aftermath of these events. But then you also get a play-by-play, and you get to have this perspective of like, oh, it was so gradual and so subtle. And even though like there are times where Alex said she was feeling uncomfortable, she still pushed past the discomfort. She ignored her instincts. And then she still allowed Josie to have access to really intimate parts of her life. So I thought, yeah, I really enjoyed the format in that way.
Yeah, I wanted to shout from the rooftops from the beginning, though. Like, danger, Will Robinson, danger. Like, I just, every single time Alex was like unpacking another layer, you know what I mean? Or she was letting Josie into her life. The thing, and Alicia and I actually were talking about this a little bit off pod, but the thing for me was when Josie started taking things from around the house. I was like, no.
Oh my gosh. I want to hear everyone's thoughts on like when they caught her on the Ring camera going through the recycling, and then okay. Alex was like, "Hey, what happened?" And she's like, "Oh, I just wanted to stop by." I'm like, that's so gaslighty. Like, she said that she saw that you on the camera.
Not tell you that this took a violent shove into inappropriate, and it was violation. I don't know what is. Literally, if I have a Ring camera on my house, okay? If I see someone doing something like that, like, my text message would not have been so friendly. I mean, yes, I might have tried to inquire, but also at the same time, I would have been like, I don't think that this is okay anymore. Like,
yeah. No, I agree, because when she was doing that, and my first thought was, okay, they have to have some kind of like video camera somewhere. Like, there is no way she's going to get away with this, because she's been slowly getting away with getting things so far. And I was waiting for her to get caught. But because of her mind and how her mind worked, like, even though she got caught, it didn't scare her. And so she kept taking stuff. So what did it for me was when she was taking like the kids' pictures, like the drawing, and then the little boy's like passport pictures, and just her, I don't know. It was just, I was like, no thanks.
Yeah, it was so creepy. But the thing is, like, what she was doing is something, she was testing limits. She was testing boundaries. Yeah. Like, Alicia, you know, like having a child, like children, like, you know, they test limits, like they'll, you know, kind of do things here and there. Same thing with adults. They'll like test limits to see how, like where your boundaries are. Like, oh, if I do this, how are you going to respond? And I think that's how she ended up feeling so comfortable, because she kept doing things to test limits. Mm-hmm. And then Alex just continued to allow her to like cross and violate these boundaries. In my head, I'm just like, okay, first of all, her showing up unannounced to your home, like that was a boundary crossing. I think that, man, I don't think that she should have allowed her into her home until she really knew her more. And I think that was irresponsible of her. But yeah, there was so many like limit testing and boundary crossings. And that's what part that made me really uncomfy. I was like, oh my gosh.
Listen, when Alex had, like, after the whole thing with her fight with Walter or whatever, that whole thing, which we'll get into in a minute. But when she just allowed Josie to stay with her, so many things were going on in my head. And I was like, if I get a glimpse of this book that she hurts one of the children, I'm out. Like, I was literally so close to like putting the book off into the bookshelf and keeping it in there, not finishing it, because I just can't with, you know, any harm to kids. I mean, it was so hard for me to get through Verity as it was. But that was like my main concern, though, was like, okay, if she hurts like one of these kids, I'm going to be so angry. But then she ends up murdering Nathan instead, which is not any better, but we'll get to that later. Also, regardless, it was just like, no, you don't. No.
And for context, listener, so Nathan is Alex's husband. I'm curious about what both of you think. So let me ask this question. Why do we think that Alex ignored her instincts or that gut feeling? Because there are a couple of times, Lisa Jewell, she does this really well. She wrote it in kind of third person, right? So you're telling from different perspectives. And you see Alex question her own decisions that she's making. Do we think she had some kind of superiority complex? Do we think that she had some kind of, because the only explanation, the only theory that I can come up with is she genuinely thought she was helping Josie. So she ignored these instincts. She ignored her gut that something was wrong or something was off. I don't know. What do you two think?
I think that she's really good at emotionally manipulating people. I think that she has like really subtle ways to control other people's emotions and make them question themselves.
You're saying Josie does.
Yeah, Josie. Yeah, she definitely has like really good ways of controlling like the narrative and controlling people's emotions. And it's very subtle, because she'll like, you'll feel like when someone's manipulating your emotions, you'll feel like that tinge of like, I shouldn't do this. But then there's just something else compelling you to still follow through. So it's really hard to explain. That's why emotional abuse is really difficult, like to, like, you know, if we think about it in terms of like domestic violence, that's why when women or men go to court and trying to get like a restraining order or something when it comes to emotional abuse, it's harder because it's less tangible. They'll say things like, I can't explain it, but something just felt off, or I can't explain it, but I kept doing this because of this. And so I think that Josie like really manipulated her. That I think she started with the podcast story and then just kind of slowly kept manipulating her, like, you know, day after day.
But do you think that Alex had this like superiority kind of complex? Like, I'm in this position, I'm in this situation where I can help people. I can help this woman.
I don't think so. For me, my whole thing was Alex had made it very clear she had just ended her series and she needed something different to boost her career. So
material. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she wanted something different. She needed something different. So I feel like even though obviously Josie was giving all of these red flags and Alex knew what was kind of going on, maybe not to a certain extent, but she still kind of had some kind of inkling on, you know, what was happening. I think because she was just so hyper focused on this story and this story coming out, and it's a vulnerable woman who has this amazing story to tell. And I feel like it was more so of her getting her listeners to like listen to this woman and the struggles that she had. And you know, the fact that they were birthday twins kind of made it more intriguing, you know, things like that. So I think that's kind of where that whole setup kind of comes into play. But I don't think she really kind of had that, you know, oh, I need to help her and, you know, she needs help kind of a thing. I don't think that's what it was at all. I think it was more so for her podcast and her followers more than mm-hmm. anything.
Yeah. I think it took that shift into it after Walter and Josie have the fight. And then she stays at Alex and Nathan's house. Abigail, go ahead.
No, I just was like a bubble, a speech bubble popped up with a thumbs up. So I was just like copying it. cool. Agreed. But to both of your points though, Alicia, when you're saying about it was for her listeners, I think initially she was like, oh wow, listeners will be really intrigued. And then at some point she got pulled in and she got mm-hmm. really intrigued. And then the lines blurred. It wasn't about like her listeners. It was about like her listening to this story and being really pulled into it. So yeah, I think eventually like those lines blurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Something that Alicia and I had talked about off podcast too, and I was curious about your thoughts, Abigail. I wanted to know more about Josie's upbringing. I did want to know more about her childhood and know more about her background. Her mom is obviously in the story. Alex expresses that she wants to meet her mom. She wants to interview her. And I don't feel like we really got a lot from Josie's mom. I don't know. What do you think about that?
In terms of like Josie's mom's perspective or like wanting to know more or?
Yeah, we find out these like vague details, right? Mm-hmm. So let me expand on it for a second, if I may. Josie very clearly has an issue with men. She doesn't like men. Mm-hmm. So where does that come from? Does it come from witnessing your mother and her relationships with men? Does it come from the fact that Josie's father wasn't in her life very much? Does it come from her relationship with Walter? We get to learn quite a bit, obviously, about Josie and Walter's relationship, and we can get into that in a moment. But I found myself wanting to understand, where does this male hate stem from? Where does it, like, why?
I guess, like, my assumption that I'm having is that this is something called, like, attachment theory. And so when it comes to, so attachment theory talks about how your relationship to your caregivers impact how you connect with people as you grow up, and especially romantic relationships, friendships, even, you know, parental relationships. And I think that when Josie grew up, like her mom called it independent, but I think that she was neglected emotionally. I think that she desired to have a connection. Her dad wasn't around, so, you know, or a lot of like maybe like male figures didn't stick around long enough for her to form a connection, but her mom was consistently there. And so maybe like it could happen, because I think Pat, Jodie's mom, has a personality disorder. And I think that like my assumption is that like Pat withheld a lot of love from Josie, was like emotionally neglecting her in that way. And that's why Josie is like really starved for like people to love her, because of that emotional neglect. Because like, you know, Pat seems to be really self-centered. And even the language that she chooses when she does finally like talk up to Alex at the end is very like egocentric. Like when she was talking, like I kept feeling like she wanted people to be like, oh, like poor you, and you tried your best with what you had, and your daughter turned out to be a monster. She even said like, I didn't like her. But anyways, I'm getting off topic. But yeah, I think that Josie's hate for men really stem from her wanting her mom to herself, in order to try to like gain her mom's approval and love and attention. And then she saw these men as obstacles to that.
Do we think that's why she stole Walter from Pat?
So I just wanted to like talk about that for a minute too here, because I know when like after kind of everything that was going on and Alex was talking to Pat about what Josie was like telling Alex and how she was like, no, like that's not what happened, because she did mention that anytime that there was like a male figure around, like Josie would scare them off. And, you know, so she, I don't know, like that's, I wish we also kind of got more too, like how was her dad? Like, was he never around? Was he abusive and then he just left? Like, did Pat leave? Did her dad die? Like, what happened in this, like, in-between thing between, you know, I don't know. So, yeah, I agree. I definitely wish we kind of knew more about what was going on with that. Mm-hmm. And then the fact, too, with Walter, because obviously Pat and Walter were a thing, and, like, Pat had said, you know, Josie just stole Walter from her. But I'm also kind of wondering about that whole thing too. Why did Walter agree to it besides being, you know, a sicko? But what made him stay so long too? You know, why did he just continue that relationship with Josie knowing the age difference? You know what I mean? So I'm just wondering, like, was Josie like, was it kind of one of those like reverse things where you hear in like domestic violence situations where women are afraid to leave, like the male abuser, like was Walter afraid to leave because Josie was abusive? Did like Josie have information over Walter that we just don't know about? Like, that's kind of also where I wish we had more information on why he stayed with her for so long, because because he was married, he had children, like, mm-hmm. What was it that made her so, that just made him so willing to pursue that relationship with someone who was obviously very young? But also too, though, we also have to think about with Walter and his ex-wife, because his ex-wife was 10 years younger than he was, because I think he was like in his late 20s and she was like a teenager too when they started getting together. So obviously he has that, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to pretend here that Walter's innocent, because the reality is that he's not. Mm-hmm. And this may or may not be an unpopular opinion. I'm going to go out on a limb here, though, and say it takes two to tango. Mm-hmm. You know, as far, and I think the thing to focus on or to drive home is, like Abigail was talking about, the manipulation. Mm-hmm. Josie was only 15 when Walter came into the picture, right? But by this time, she's probably seen or experienced different men come and go from her mom's life. She's learning how to play the game, if you will, quote unquote, and also to talk about the attachment styles like you were talking about, Abigail. I think Josie saw her mom going after these relationships with these men. She saw them as an obstacle, like you talked about, right? She saw them as an obstacle. I don't know necessarily what set Walter apart and what shifted or changed to the point that Josie goes, oh, he's no longer an obstacle. He's now my ticket out, if mm-hmm. you I don't, you know.
He stayed for longer than what, like, the other, like, what she, her mom, like, what Pat described the other men did. Like, he stayed for what? Like, I think they were dating, what, two years before Josie started to pursue him? And it sounds like, yeah, that might have been longer than maybe what other people, like, what other men, how long other men stayed. And so maybe she, like, in her mind, like, I don't know what twisted. I can't, you know, we can't say for certain because all that information's, like, missing. But something in her mind, like, shifted, like, when she turned 14 or however old, or 15. And then she just made the decision, like, oh, no, I want him.
Yeah, it's very interesting. We can stay on them. We're going to talk about that dinner for a moment. Before we get to that, let's shift gears just for a second to talk about Nathan and Alex, because to give you a little bit of background, listener, if you haven't read along with us, so Nathan and Alex have been together for a while. They have two lovely children. Nathan has a drinking problem. He struggles with alcoholism, and it's something that has obviously been a point of tension in their marriage, in their home, for a while. So here's my thing, and I think that Alicia and I were kind of talking about this a little bit off podcast again as well, but bringing it now here, Nathan to me seemed like a very real man with real demons and was doing the best that he could, right? We got a little bit of his backstory that there was some trauma. His brother committed suicide, if I'm not mistaken, or died.
I believe one of his family members, like, he, like, passed away. I don't remember if it's suicide or not. I can't remember. I can't
remember what the exact detail was either, but it happened when Nathan was young, shortly before he met Alex, and it really impacted who he became and who he was as an adult, right? Yeah. Super, like, oh, I so cringe whenever Nathan and Josie would interact. Did anybody else feel as uncomfortable as I did in those conversations? Like,
Josie was bold in her, like, verbally attacking Nathan. She'd do it to Alex. Like, she'd say really bold things to Alex. She'd say really bold things to Nathan. I'm like, girl, like, you don't even know this woman. And this woman doesn't even know you. But you have the audacity to be like, oh, man, like, that's disgusting behavior. Or, oh, man, like, you shouldn't have been out. Or, you know, and so, yeah, it was just their interactions were always made me really uncomfortable. I'm like, I would have kicked her out of my house. I'm like, you don't want to boundary pushing, right? She was pushing limits and no one stopped her. Everyone was like, just let her.
Yeah. And no, seriously, I feel like the dinner made me uncomfortable, but what made me extra uncomfy was when they had got back from dinner and Josie was like, you're an embarrassment, you're embarrassing me, like, why do you have to act that way? And I was like, he wasn't doing anything. Like, I don't know,
Walter, right.
Yeah, her, Josie and Walter, yeah. So, like, that whole scenario that happened that led to her showing up at Alex's. But just, like, that whole thing with them getting into a fight because she was, like, you know, just, you embarrassed me and, like, what were you doing? And I don't know, all that stuff. I was like, what? Like, you were the one that was being crazy. Like, Walter was just sitting back, just, he didn't even want to go to this thing in the first place. So, I don't know.
Yeah, he was talking, though. Like, he was, like, I thought, oh, like, even though he wanted to be there, he was still asking, like, really good questions and trying to get to know Alex. Like, he was pushing himself to be there, but, you know, part of his nature is that he was quiet. But, like, the way Josie twisted, like, I did not expect that. I did not expect to read that when they came home and she's like, you embarrass me, you're an embarrassment. Like, and he initially tried to ignore her. He was like, this woman crazy. She going off again. But then she just kept going.
Okay. So then that also triggered, like, there was a language there that triggered Josie, right? When she starts getting called crazy, when she starts getting called stupid or insane, it, oh man,
And that was when I knew, because she said that there was, like, the rage that was boiling inside of her and she just, like, let go. I knew at that point when she was explaining to Alex that, like, Walter, like, beat her up and whatever, I was like, she lied. She is straight up lying. Like, I knew at that point Walter had died. I had a feeling. And then sure enough, later on, when we get Aaron's side of the story about what happened and, like, he had a heart attack because, you know, she was beating him up and she wasn't obviously going to call for help or anything. Which, side note, can we just say, regardless of how Walter was with Josie and his ex-wife and him, you know, just that age difference and all of that, like, yeah, he's not an innocent man. He loved his children. First and foremost, he loved his children. Second of all, I feel like he didn't need to go out that way. That was so sad for me because his kids didn't see this side that Josie portrayed him to be. And, you know, he wanted that encouragement with Aaron and her gaming and everything like that. And he was really sad when Roxy had left. And yeah, so just a side note on that. He wasn't innocent in any way, but he definitely didn't deserve to die that way.
Well, and we'll get to Roxy's storyline and Aaron's storyline a little bit more in a second. I feel the same way about both Walter and Nathan. I don't think that either of them deserved that fate.
No.
Not at all.
No.
So, listener, if you have not read, yeah, Josie kills them both.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Josie kills them both.
Cold-blooded killer.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
I know. And, like, the thing with Nathan too, because, I mean, at this point, anything that comes out of Josie's mouth, obviously I didn't believe her. But if in some bizarre world that she didn't mean to kill Nathan, because she said that whatever she drugged him with, like, she didn't mean to give him that much. Like, she just wanted to give him enough to, like, you know, go to sleep, be gone for a few days, and then come back. I just kind of wonder, like, what her intentions were then. You know what I mean? Like, if she didn't mean to kill him, then, like, was she just trying to, like, prove to Alex, like, you know, yeah, your husband isn't worth what you're thinking that he is and you're better off without him. Like, I was just kind of curious about that. But I mean, obviously, we know at this point that she was just on a vengeance for some reason at that point.
My notes, the math wasn't mathing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's the Abigail's earlier point at the end, the letter from Josie to Alex. What did you call it, Abigail? You said it was very egocentric. It was very, like, I'm the victim. I'm innocent. I didn't mean to do this. This was what I actually meant to do. No, honey, no. Like, I'm sorry. You're a 45-year-old woman with all your faculties. It's not, you don't just kidnap a man and overdose him on barbiturates.
Yeah. She never faces consequences because people are just like, they just ignore her. So of course, like, that's what, how she responds, like, oh, it wasn't my fault, or it was like other circumstances, because no one's ever held her accountable. Like, for that instance where Alex was poking holes in her story and saying, this doesn't make sense, and she got upset and walked out.
Yep.
Because she was being held accountable and she didn't like it, so she left.
Literally the point that I wrote down the note where I was saying the math wasn't, like, it wasn't adding up. The math wasn't mathing. No. And it was funny because we can kind of talk about the ending for a second. The way that this all ends is kind of left to interpretation almost, if you will, because you're left to this point where you can believe Pat's story, Aaron and Roxy's story. You can believe Alex's story, right? Or even the woman that, Caitlin was her name, that Josie got to seduce Nathan, you know, any of these things. But it's almost like Josie was so focused on herself. She was so, like, focused on convincing herself that it was everybody else that led to these outcomes. It was everybody else that led to these consequences and not herself, you know? And that was where I was like, no, I'm not. And that's the difference from Verity, right? Let's compare it to Verity for a second here, if we can, because Verity's ending is also left to interpretation, right? Do we believe the letter that Verity wrote? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You can if you want to. You can if you want to.
Yeah, I say the ending though, like when she was recounting, like who knows if that was accurate or not. Like something I was thinking of is that Roxy, like when you have operational defiant disorder, like you don't just like. You typically don't just grow out of it. And so, like, there was a point where it was, like, Aaron and Roxy on the podcast, and Aaron was like, yeah, you know, like, she smiled at Roxy. She's like, yeah, she's, you know, she, like, for her breaking my arm, yeah, it was just sibling stuff, and, like, you know, it just happened, and, like, smiled at her. I'm like, I've gotten into throwdowns with...
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, we've gotten into our throwdowns. That's for dang sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. Yeah. And like to that point, though, too, you know, I don't know. Again, with that ending, I think we had talked about this kind of off the pod, too, where we were like, do we, you know, how do we like interpret this ending? You know, like, was she actually telling the truth and everyone else was crazy? But just kind of the way that all the stories were lining up that led to,
yeah,
like the end here. Yeah, I don't know. Jesse's crazy. That's all there is to it.
Moral of the story. Moral of the story. Go ahead, Abigail. Finish your thought.
Sorry. Like, I don't know what happened. My like, everything just, like, shut down. I forgot what I was saying, honestly. Someone else go. I got too distracted. My ADHD is kicking in.
I was gonna say let's talk about the time that we were just having fun, right, Abigail? Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, you remember that? That was very traumatic. I'm still not over it. Okay.
Yeah, you're scrappy. You're fine. Anyway. But yeah, now I remember what I was saying.
I knew that that would get you going.
Yeah, so, but that was very strange. So, you know, when you think about the title, like, none of this is true. I also question, like, if, like, Aaron and Roxy are also telling the truth. Because also, like, another thing I think about is that, like, I think if Aaron had witnessed her mom, you know, like, had murdered Brooke, because there was another murder, right, that happened in the story, I think there would have been, I don't know, I feel like there would have been more done, but, like, this whole book, everyone was hearing about these horrific things or witnessing them, and they were just letting them slide. And so that was, like, the part that made me feel uncomfortable and uneasy, too. But, yeah, so, but what I was getting at before about Josie's, like, flashback, a part of me feels like maybe Roxy did murder Brooke. So that's kind of what I feel.
You think Roxy did it, not Josie?
I think so. That's like that's my thought process, because it would make so much more sense. Like, why would Brooke come to the house? There's really no reason, because what, Aaron or Josie asked her to come? Like, why would she come? Like, there's no incentive there. Like, but if Roxy had asked her, that makes more sense. So that's what was confusing to me.
Unless Josie was masquerading as Roxy via text or phone to somehow entice Brooke. I don't know. Opened up a can of worms. I'm not saying that I won't be convinced, but I guess what I am saying is it makes more sense to me that it was Josie that killed Brooke. So to give a little bit of context again for you, listener, Brooke was essentially Roxy's lover, was Roxy's partner, if you will. They met in high school. And started out, of course, as like best friends, and grew into this, you know, blossoming, budding relationship, what have you. And I do think, because we know that Josie is an attention seeker, right? We know Josie wants the focus always to be on her. And so I think that when things in Roxy's life started shifting, you know, she was discovering her sexuality, she was finding a partner, she was doing all of these different things, Josie didn't like that. And I think Brooke was this positive support system for Roxy. I think that they had this like really good, healthy relationship, or so it would seem according to the book. And that's why, to Josie, in Josie's mind, she goes, oh, no, this has to be eliminated.
That makes sense.
On that point, yeah, I agree with that part of it, with it being Josie. However, though, with it being Roxy that killed her, because I honestly wouldn't be surprised if it was actually Roxy that had killed Brooke, because it wouldn't surprise me if Walter was maybe doing something with Brooke, considering his history with underage kids. So, you know, considering his wife or his ex-wife was underage when they met, and then Josie was underage, and yeah, she like manipulated her way, probably. Again, we don't really know the whole story with that, but she manipulated him. But considering those two pieces of it, it wouldn't surprise me if Walter tried to pursue Brooke or something to that degree may have happened, and maybe Brooke brought it up Roxy and was like, hey, your dad is crazy. He tried to like advance with me, or, you know, we just don't know. But that's something, yeah, that's like an interpretation too, where we have to think about, because like we mentioned before, Walter is not innocent. He's a pedophile pretty much. And so it wouldn't surprise me if something to that degree happened, and maybe Roxy didn't mean to kill her. Maybe something happened and she accidentally did it. And the only way to protect her was for her and Walter to hide the body. Like, we just don't, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at.
Because something I think about, to piggyback off what you're saying, Alicia, is that Roxy, when Roxy was telling Alex about the storage unit, she was like, oh, there's a path that you can take. But then she also said, but there's a window that you can take, like, you can use to get to there. And when, like, to get to the storage unit. And when Josie was recounting it, she was recounting how Walter walked them through to get the body out through the window. And all these things. So that's what it's like. It's like that little detail that like made me question reality. But again, we'll never know, but I'm questioning it.
Yeah. And because also Roxy already has a defiant behavior. I mean, if she had no problem breaking her sister's arm, what makes you think she wouldn't have an issue killing somebody?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's what, yeah, this, I didn't like the ending. I don't like it when endings distort like what we think we pieced together. It's like, oh, we thought we solved the mystery, but there's still so much more possibly.
Yeah. Well, and to speak to the title, I guess, for a moment, if I can, right? Like, none of this is true. So you kind of have to interpret how you will, I suppose. I don't really know. I know that one's hard. That's a hard one. In this book, at least, it did not bother me as much as I know that it has with like other books or like other films.
Mm-hmm.
Because I agree. I don't necessarily think that this one had like a super clean ending, if you will. At the same time, I don't know that I went into it expecting it to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the only thing I can think about, the only thing I can compare it to, is Shutter Island. Have you both watched Shutter Island?
I have not. No.
Nope, me either.
Okay.
The look on your face.
You know, but you know the one I'm talking about, right? It's with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio. Mm-hmm.
Flo is in there, I think, too. I'm not going to spoil that. I'm not going to give it away. I'm literally just going to tell you, though, that you do not know up from down by the time the ending of that movie comes around. That 2 hour, 2.5 hour film ends, and you go, I literally have no idea what reality is. And I think Inception is a little bit like that too.
I was just about to say that. Inception was what got me thinking, like, wait, like, when are they in that alternate world and when are they in like real world? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. You have no idea. You have the end of the movie. Does that dreidel, does it drop? I don't know. Oh my goodness. Well, was there anything else that anybody wanted to speak to? Did anything else jump out at us that we feel like we should address or we should talk about?
No, not that I can't think of anything else. That book was just a whole trip in itself. Super uncomfy. I'm glad we got it over with.
Yes.
Better than Verity.
Wait, yeah, like Verity, I'm ready to like sell it to the Half Price Books that's up the street to get it out of my hair. So yeah, I'll keep this one, but Verity, I'm throwing it.
Well, and there's even, hold on, because there's even a review by Emily Henry. Y'all, we have covered Emily Henry on this podcast, The Happy Place. Mm-hmm. Henry's review is on, it's the very first on the back of this book. If you liked Verity by Colleen Hoover, I think you'll love this one. Twisty, twisty, twisty.
Interesting. I hated Verity, so I'm surprised I really liked this one. So there you go.
I didn't like Verity, but this one was good.
This is great.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, should we get into our like film, TV, movie segment? Because Alicia, I was kind of surprised. I really liked yours. So who was your dream cast here?
Yeah, so I didn't have like anyone in particular on who would be who, but I was just going deep in my mind about horror movies and thriller movies that I have watched. So like Toni Collette, she played the mom in Hereditary, and she was super creepy. She ends up getting possessed. It was like a whole thing. I love her to death in any horror thriller. I think she just thrives so well on it. Vera Farmiga, I don't know how you say her last name, so my bad. But anyway, she was in the Conjuring series playing Lorraine. She was like a psychic. She could see the dead. It was like a whole thing. Absolutely love her. I would recommend her. Patrick Wilson, he played, I can't think of his name, in the Insidious series. But
I love Patrick, so good.
I do too. He's so good. And then I was thinking for like creepy old men, Stephen Lang. He's literally in this movie called Old Man, and I think there's like another one where it's like a silent horror movie. You just like go throughout this whole movie and it's quiet. I don't remember what it's called, but it was like so good, and he's super creepy. So I was like, he would be perfect. I think he would be perfect for Walter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just loved the idea of like Jenna Ortega and Emma Roberts. Like, I think they play so well in thrillers as it is. So I thought they would be like chef's kiss, just perfect for maybe as Aaron and Roxy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Those were my picks for sure. Oh, and also Jennifer Carpenter, I added her in there too as like a possible somewhere. The Exorcism of Emily Rose is probably one of my favorite horror movies, and she did so well being possessed. And I just, maybe she would be a good Josie. I'm just throwing that out there. So those are my peeps. So those are my people.
I like it. What about for you, Abigail?
So I didn't go super deep. I just kind of kept it to like, I think Rachel Weisz. She, I don't know if you ever saw The Mummy. So yeah, so she played the Mummy. I think she would be a really good Josie because like in the first movie, she like kind of looked really meek and there was just like more to her. I think she would do really well as Josie. And then Natalie Dormier. So she played in Game of Thrones, and then she was also in like I think she played Anne Boleyn in the TV show the Tudors. So she's really gorgeous, and I think she'd make a really great Alex.
Nice.
And then Dakota Fanning as Erin, I could see her really playing that role very well.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. I love that one.
Yeah, and she's really good in thrillers too. So I think she'd fit perfectly. And that's as far as I got, really. I kept getting stumped. I was like, but I really don't know. But like Patrick Wilson, I think he'd make a great like Nathan now that like I see this, like your suggestion.
No, I have to agree. I feel like this one is hard to dream cast. In addition to Patrick Wilson, though, let me lay this one on you for Nathan, Dan Stevens. And he was the one that played Matthew Crawley from Downton Abbey.
Oh, I can see that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I wrote down Colin Firth was the one that was like coming to my mind for Walter, actually. I was like, because I don't know. He's not described as like a good looking old man, but you're like, I don't know. Anyway, I like the idea of Dakota Fanning as Erin. You said Toni Collette, and I was like, ooh, I really like that too. Mm-hmm. Or Hannah Waddingham.
Oh, I like, love her.
Okay. Could she not play Alex or Josie? Honestly, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like she really could. And then another one that's coming to my mind right now actually is Nicole Kidman.
I know. And I was thinking, too, when you said Dakota Fanning, Abby, I thought of Elle Fanning, too. When she played that girl in the train crash with the kids, Super 8. When she played, oh, my gosh. Yes. So I could see Dakota or Elle in yes. So I agree. So okay. Good.
Mm-hmm. Good choices.
So good. Yes.
Dang. Well, should we get into a little bit of end matter? I cannot believe this is already March. We've made our way through the first of our list for 2024, basically. But April, listener, we are super excited for something I've been calling a palate cleanser, in my opinion. This next book is going to be Tom Link by Anne Patchett. I'm super excited and cannot wait. So looking forward to diving into that one for April. And I mean, I would recommend, listener, if you haven't picked up this thriller, if you haven't picked up None of This Is True, but you are a thriller fan, this is definitely a good one. This is a good one to go with. So I would say read it, personally. And I know The Jewel has other thrillers out there as well. But yeah, I'm so excited to keep reading with you ladies and to continue on our journey with the Tales Over Tales podcast. You can find me, by the way, on Instagram. I am at Cozy Reads and Sips. We do also have an Instagram for the podcast. It's Tales Over Tales podcast. Abigail and Alicia, where can the people find you?
So you guys can find me on my Bookstagram at Allie, A-L-L-Y, .reads.turner. Also, you guys, we do have a Gmail. So if you guys ever want to email us your book ideas, we do have our email, talesovertalespod@gmail.com.
Okay. And then you can find me at The Charles in Charge. That's all I got. I got one Instagram.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh my goodness. Well, yes, listener, leave us a rating. Only 5 stars. Please be kind. Leave us a review. Let us know what you're reading. Let us know what you would like to see read or featured on the podcast. We definitely love interacting with you and look forward to hearing from everybody. But until then, stay reading.
Stay classy.
And as always,
stay drinking.
Bye.